As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of The Beat. I'm Brendan Quinn, here with Nick Baumgartner. Very special guest today. One of the busier men in America, I would think. David Warlock.
Has to be.
David, your official title is Director of Media Coordination and Stats.
That's right.
For the NCAA, right?
Correct.
I feel like a lot falls under that umbrella, my man. For a few years. I don't know if that title actually says what you do. So can you explain to some of the listeners out there kind of what your role is?
I'm still trying to figure it out myself. So I oversee a 13-person staff that works in championships at the NCAA. So what we do is we handle all the day-to-day statistics for 44 sports. That includes men, women, division one, two, and three, and obviously a fourth division of football with FCS. So we do all the statistics, all the records books, player records, coaching records, any of those historical season, career, and game records. And then we do the RPI for certain sports, the net for men's and women's basketball. We're responsible for updating that daily. So that's the stats side of it. And then the media side of it is we oversee, media operations for all 90 championships. We're obviously not on site for all 90, but the ones that have a heavier media presence, roughly about two dozen, mostly obviously Division One, but a couple of Division Two championships as well. Our staff is on site handling those media operations. So I oversee that staff. Me personally, my main job is D1 men's basketball. So the media operations for that. And I also dabble in football statistics in the fall. But that kind of sums it up in a nutshell.
And you I would say, have you're our main go-between in terms of questions regarding the committee and questions regarding logistics of the tournament. So you are obviously working intimately with, the infrastructure of the NCAA in terms of putting on these events, and then also the men's basketball selection committee in terms of just everything that people see, the inner workings of that. You are probably as close to it as anyone out there. So a great get, as we say, this time of year for an interview. So we do appreciate you coming on. I am drinking out of my 2019 Final Four in Minneapolis coffee mug.
Oh, there you go.
And dreaming of holding a 2021 coffee mug. Yeah. So we're almost there. Before we kind of get into the logistics that we want to ask about, David, from last year to today, it's been really hard for a lot of people, obviously. But, for us in the corner of the world, of college basketball, you know, losing last year's men's tournament was jarring. And for you, I'm sure it knocked you straight on your back. And for us to be here on February 17th and, you know, kind of having this year's tournament within view, you know, how are you feeling? And what has this kind of been like?
Yeah, feeling optimistic. And it's a credit to all the teams out there who are, you know, doing everything they can to stay healthy and play games. And I think, you know, the men's basketball committee put out, you know, word that, you know, they wanted every team to play at least 13 Division I games this year. We're at fewer than 40 tournament eligible teams that have not reached 13 yet. So most of them have accomplished that, and there's still a ways to go. And the ones who aren't, frankly, are very close to 13. So you're feeling like you're going to have a tournament. Things are trending in the right direction. The planning is ongoing. But then in the back of your mind, Brandon and Nick, you're thinking about the disappointment of last year, and it was jarring. It hurt everyone, you know, all the fans, all the coaches, the media. From a staffing standpoint, you know, we're still feeling the ripple effects of that. Sure. We've lost, I think as a direct result of that, we lost about 10% of our staff at the NCAA. Not, it was all voluntary, to be clear, but we still have to, you know, cut budgets, and it impacts my world and impacts our staff and, you know, the media coordination statistics staff. We talked about a moment ago, you know, we won't be traveling quite as much as we normally would. Services to the media, you know, like ASAP transcripts, which I know are gold to writers and reporters out there. You know, we're going to be doing those on a more limited basis this year. You know, things of that nature, where it just impacts everything we do from an operation standpoint. The main thing is you just don't want the participating teams to feel any of that, and that we make this as good of an experience as possible. Obviously, with everything being, you know, 67 games, generally in one city, with the addition, also the addition of Bloomington and West Lafayette for some first four and first round games, and the fact that, you know, there'll be, you know, a less social aspect of it for the team that I think they're used to on their campuses anyway. But so from that standpoint, it'll feel different. But in terms of playing games, maybe in, you know, less crowded arenas and whatnot, but getting the games in, I think, is the important thing. And you know, we're certainly doing everything we can to get to that finish line.
David, you mentioned being optimistic, and, you know, I'm looking at the calendar here, and we're just about 11 months removed from, you know, sort of when all this, almost to the day, or all to the week anyway. And I'm curious, as the year went on, and you guys, you know, you're focused with basketball, but as you saw all the other sports sort of go through, how long did it take for you to get to a place of saying, you know, you can say I'm optimistic we'll have a tournament, right? I assume that it took a minute, and I'm kind of curious if it, you know, maybe even lingered into the start of the season or even to recently.
It did, Nick. You know, I'll be honest, when the tournament was canceled and I rebooked my flight, you know, I was in New York for selection, and, you know, March 12th was the date that, you know, a date we'll never forget. You know, we canceled the tournament, and the next day I'm flying, you know, home, just kind of in a daze and in shock, wondering, you know, what's happening, you know, to the world. It was obviously a bigger thing than a basketball tournament. And as big a sports fan as I am for lots of sports, just seeing what was happening to the NHL and the NBA, in addition to what we were doing. I'm not much of a golf fan, but just, you know, I obviously appreciate the enormity of the event of the Masters and seeing that, then the NFL draft, and then the MLB season. And you're just going, what in the world is going on? Right. How long is this actually going to last? Did I think in March we'd still be having COVID conversations in February? No, I did not, to be honest with you. And maybe that's just me being naive about the pandemic.
But
it definitely went on past the start of the season, because, you know, we're starting the season late. You had, you know, a whole conference opt out of that of playing this year. And so, you know, you, you worry. It was your natural worries, like, can we get to, you know, to March? And, you know, now, so like you said, here we are on February 17th. We're, you know, less than 2 weeks from March, and then the committee will be reporting soon after that to Indy for selections, and you just hope things keep trending well, and that once a bracket is announced, that, you know, teams remain healthy, and, you know, we can get 67 games in.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
So today's February 17th, March 14th, Selection Sunday. You know, one of the interesting things about this year that I feel like it's probably going, maybe just will go unseen by your average fan is, right, all these places, all these schools, and you guys, there's been an order of how you do things for all of these years, right? Selection Sunday comes out, the bracket goes out, all these teams, everyone, you know, the Dobos know what they're doing, people know what they're doing. Well, this year, you know, between testing, between rules that it's going to take to travel to Indy, between everything else, like, it's totally different. So, like, let's start this off with this question. Selection Sunday, bracket comes out, right? What happens then for these teams? You know what I mean?
Get 67 teams to Indy, and that has to be coordinated so that you don't have 12 teams landing within an hour of each other, because we're trying to keep the social thing. So it's get them to Indy, you know, continue with the testing protocols. You know, typically we'd be starting the tournament on the following Tuesday with the first four. That obviously is not happening. The first four, instead of over two nights, will be, you know, all two locations in one night on Thursday, the 18th. And then, you know, just, you know, that Thursday, Brendan and Nick, I know you guys can appreciate this just as fans of the game and covering the game. That Thursday is just,
it's a holiday.
You're mad. It is. I mean, it, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. I grew up in Germany because I was a military player, and we got games on Armed Forces Network early in the tournament, but it would be like a first round game, a second round game. Mm-hmm. And then the coverage picked up as you got to the Sweet 16. When I was a college freshman, finding out that all the games were on television, ESPN started its coverage at 11 a.m. Central with the college in Arkansas. And I was like, wait, what? Yeah, I mean, it was exactly, Nick, what you just said. It was a holiday.
Yeah.
I literally, in the spring semester, last 3 years of college, took courses at 8, 9, 10 or 8 and 9:30 on Tuesday, Thursday. So that, because I hated missing class. And I literally would get all my classes out of the way early in the morning, because after that, just leave me alone. I'm not checked out for the next 12 hours watching games. And so to not have that Thursday, it's going to be weird. Let's make it a 1 year thing though, and get it back to normal next year. But I still think, looking at the new schedule, it'll still be fine. And Thursday, Friday becomes Friday, Saturday, and Saturday, right, Sunday becomes, you know, Sunday, Monday, and for the second round. And then there's a bit of a longer break between the second round and the Sweet 16, with it starting on a Saturday. But I like the idea of Saturday Sweet 16, with each game getting its own broadcast window, and you don't have to you know, flip between in a normal year, the Thursday night Sweet 16 games where you have two and the, you know, the games are, you know, the 7 o'clock hour and the 9 o'clock hour staggered, of course, but just having their own window will be, I think, you know, cool for the Sweet 16 participants. And then the Elite Eight games on Monday night and Tuesday night will, I think, you know, again, with their own windows in prime time, I think will be cool. It'll be different. It'll obviously take some adjusting, but yeah, I kind of look forward to getting back to a normal schedule.
Yeah, that's going to be an event, that Elite Eight. And just so our listeners are clear, if for anyone hasn't followed some of this, so unlike normal years where people are used to that Thursday, Friday, like David's talking about, you know, this year will be Selection Sunday. The first four games will take place that Thursday at Mackey Arena and Assembly, right?
Correct.
And then the first and second round games will then take place over the ensuing 4 days. So Friday, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday will be the first and second rounds. Those are at places all over the Indianapolis area, right? You got like eight.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Right. Yeah. And then Sweet 16, the following Saturday, Sunday, Elite Eight, that Monday, Tuesday, Final Four, as you would be used to. So, David, what's happening in Indy right now? Because the convention center, right, you're putting in 12 practice courts. You're getting all these hotel rooms ready. So each team can bring, what, 34 people?
34, yes.
34 people in a travel party, right? Everyone's getting, I believe, their own hotel rooms. So, I mean, this is just a monster operation occurring within Indianapolis. What does it look like right now on your end?
Yeah, a lot of, you know, from a committee standpoint, the things I'm involved with, you know, there's just so many questions out there. For example, related to conference tournaments and teams opting in. So the committee is focused on those operations. You know, the question keeps coming up, what are you going to do if a team is selected to the tournament and then, you know, prior to the tournament that there's a COVID outbreak with the team or multiple teams? What are you going to do if that happens after the tournament begins? And so we're still finalizing those contingency plans. The committee had a good discussion about it last week. The city, meanwhile, you know, the Indiana Sports Corp, all our hosts from the Horizon League, Ball State, IU, Purdue, Butler, IUPUI, they're working tirelessly along with the men's basketball staff and then the others like me who work on this championship, just to get everything going. Like all the hotel, each team is on its own floor. We're going to move the Sweet 16 teams all to one hotel, again, on their own floor. For me personally, just working on all the media availability, especially virtual coverage of this tournament, because most people are going to have to cover this tournament virtually because there's no direct access, you know, to the players and coaches. Right. So from your standpoint, gone are the breakout sessions, the open locker room sessions, you know, the just the press conference interview rooms, you know, where you can, you know, see multiple people on a dais at once. So all those type of operations things are changing significantly this year. You know, I'm biased because I've lived in Indy for nearly 20 years now, and but they totally get it in terms of running big events. You know, I continuously hear how media from fans who go to the Final Four every year, how Indy is, you know, their favorite or certainly one of their favorites to have the tournament. It's obviously going to look different with reduced media, reduced fans, no NABC convention, so, you know, coach spotting going all over downtown. But they're prepared to do this event, and they'll do it quite well.
Yeah, we were talking earlier, and I don't think, and you probably agree, David, I don't think there's another city, maybe Atlanta, that could maybe pull that off. I don't know. I mean, Indy does such a good job with everything else in the combine. You mentioned the fans. What's the situation with, I mean, is this a families only situation? Are they going to open it up to fans to buy tickets, or is there a limited number, and how's that going to kind of go?
Yeah, we'll definitely have, you know, player and coaches' families in attendance. Optimistic that it's going to be, you know, more than that. We were hoping to have an announcement on that, you know, soon, and I still suspect it will be soon. I think we're in the stages of, you know, dotting all the I's and crossing the T's, if you will, in terms of the final announcement. But we'll have something soon, and you know, we're optimistic, like I said, that we'll be able to have, you know, limited attendance in addition to the player and coaches, you know, guests.
Yeah, Marion County Health Department told the Pacers, right, that they can have 25% capacity at their home game. Mm. So it does seem like that's sort of a almost line of demarcation of what's possible. Is that kind of fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it's possible. I mean, now that announcement is, I don't know exactly how old, but it's a few weeks old, and you know, the Pacers still, you know, have fans, you know, at their home games yet. You know, the Colts back in the fall, you know, had a number, and then they actually decreased it during the season after there was a spike. And so, I mean, there's, you know, there's recommendations, and then there's, you know, the application of what actually takes place, and sometimes, you know, that can vary.
Now, this technically won't be a bubble. I know you guys aren't calling it a bubble because, number one, there's a couple different spots before everybody gets to Indy, I guess, in general. But, you know, I believe controlled environment was the phrase that I saw used. How is that structure, I guess, it's, you know, going to operate, I guess, overall? I mean, is it – what's the difference maybe between this and maybe what we saw what the NBA did? Because I know I don't – I saw there was not going to be a snitch line or anything like this. So, I mean, people are going to be on the honor system, of course. But, like, sort of how's that going to work if you could walk us through that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the teams are going to be confined generally to, you know, the convention center where they'll practice. Obviously, the whatever competition venue their games get assigned to, in their hotels. And we're going to try to make their experience at the hotel, you know, where they're not just trapped in a, you know, a room with four walls and a, you know, a bathroom and a television. You know, so we'll try to have, you know, social areas that are, you know, we'll have social distancing in that area where they can play video games, or you know, if the schools that are, you know, still in session, you know, have the opportunity to take care of their academics. And you know a lot of schools will be on spring break, so that won't be an issue. But, you know, the dining area, the recreation area, just having things for them to do to pass time and be entertained will you know, are some of the operations things we're working on now.
So in terms of the you know, the next few weeks and decisions that have to be made and things like that. You mentioned fans. You know, what are some of the other things that you guys are, you know, kind of on the cusp of having to pull the trigger on in terms of either announcing decisions that have already been made or decisions that are yet to be made?
Yeah, I think it's the what are you going to do if type of announcement. Yeah, that is you know, certainly, you know, on the forefront of what could be announced next, along with the attendance, those two things. You know, the rest of it is really just operational. From my standpoint, it's putting together a media schedule that is based on the practice availability, so that teams can, you know, have media opportunities, you know, that we'll make, so that there's access via Zoom to players and coaches on the off days, as well as the post game. So we're just literally setting up hundreds of Zoom links to get ready for the press conference. The press conferences will, you know, we can only have one person at a time. So what we'll probably do to expedite things is after the game ends, we'll send the coach from the losing team to their interview pod or room, if you will. And then at the same time, have a player from the winning team go to that team's pod. Mm-hmm. And they'll speak for 12 minutes, and then we'll swap out. So the winning team's coach will replace his player in their room, and a player from the losing team will replace his coach in their room. So just working out all those type of logistics and how that's going to work. Like I said, setting up all those Zoom links. You know, the committee, I think their focus right now is on selections. You know, sure. That hasn't changed. I mean, the charge is still to select the best 37 this year instead of 36 at large to go with the 31 AQs. And you know, we worked hard on that last week, and it resulted in the top 16 unveiling on Saturday. But, you know, that can change with every passing day. But, you know, the committee, I think, you know, we're trying to keep them focused on, you know, monitoring the conferences for which they're primary or secondary monitors, and just make sure we're completely prepared for the selection process.
The whole what do you do if thing, obviously the number one is the nightmare scenario of losing an entire team, right? Are you guys fairly comfortable at this point that, you know, within the testing procedures that are going to be put into place. And, you know, that if it is one individual or two individuals, you can still, you know, it might not have to disqualify an entire team. Like, where is that in the conversation right now?
I think, you know, we're doing everything we can so that, you know, if a player does test positive, it won't necessarily, you know, wipe out an entire team's ability to participate in the tournament. What keeps us up at night, though, Brennan, is exactly what you just said, is that what if it's widespread in a team,
right,
and, you know, we're about to play a Sweet 16 game and a team has to, you know, can no longer play. That'll be, you know, the, I don't know if that's the worst case scenario. Last year was the worst case scenario. We didn't have football. That's what keeps us up at night. And we want to make sure we're doing everything we can to prevent that from happening. I mean, it's Dan Gavitt has said for months now, you know, the virus controls us, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're going to put protocols in place based on our observations and conversations with MLB, NHL, WNBA, NBA, so on and so forth, CFP, of course. So we're going to take all the precautionary steps we can. It's obviously going to require buy-in, quite frankly, from the 8 teams, but the operations people, the game officials, everyone who will be, you know, in and around the court. And, you know, we're going to take our best shot at this and just, if it does get to the point where we have to, you know, lose a team, so to speak, we don't want it to be because of a lack of preparation. And, you know, right, so that's what we're working on now.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
I just had a quick follow-up to that. Is there a potential scenario that you could see in when the bracket's being built, right? If, you know, knock on wood, this is not even a conversation, but if there is a team that's not in position to be able to play that week, is there a scenario where the S-curve gets bumped up and one team just slides up? Could that actually play out?
I mean, during the selection process, if we get, you know, word from a team that they won't be able to participate, that obviously changes things and it looks much different than the brackets out. Now, what do you do?
Right.
So, you know, I can't get into the details, but, you know, we're preparing for those various scenarios. Mm-hmm. And like I made a lot of progress last week with the committee and discussion. So, you know, hopefully there's something out there, you know, that we can share, you know, in the near future.
And you guys, David, it's 7 straight days, every person in a travel party, every member of the 34, whatever, 7 straight days, they all have to test negative before they can even arrive. Is that correct? Like, so in theory, and if they're going to stay there, you know, possibly for a whole month, I mean, in theory, you guys on the front end, you know, have your bases covered, it seems anyway.
Yes, you hope so. Like I said, you're doing everything you can to reduce, if you can't eliminate it, because like I said, the virus is in control here, mm-hmm. but to reduce the chances of something like that happening, you know, then we're going to take those steps.
Let's get into some committee stuff. So metrics, of course, can't account for pauses that teams go through, right? And it's everything that kind of goes into that. How do you kind of see, especially that aspect of it, teams that had pauses, right? So they either had fewer games or teams that, you know, you can account for certain types of performances coming off of pauses, right? you know, how do you kind of see the committee batting that very unique scenario around?
You know, I think it's fair to say that they're going to look at teams that have been on a pause, mm-hmm. And see how they responded to that. You know, you could learn a lot from, you know, what you saw in Michigan on Sunday. I mean, I personally watched the first half and I thought, I mean, yeah. For one, they're playing in Madison, which, you know, in a normal year is never an easy chore anyway. But you could just tell they weren't quite themselves. And then the second half, you know, especially after the first few minutes of the second half, it was a credit to their team just how gritty they were. And they just I don't know, I guess the word that comes to mind is they sort of just stalked the Badgers. And it was like, we're creeping closer, closer, closer. And you're just looking at the clock and, you know, and then in the last segment of that game, they just finally caught them, passed them and, you know, took control of the game. And it was just like, man, that was just a really good win on the road against a good team, especially when rust was a factor. Other teams have had similar success and other teams, you know, have not. But I think what the committee is going to do is evaluate the games played and keep it to the bare basics that, you know, who'd you play, where'd you play, and how'd you do. And, you know, you have to demonstrate an ability to beat quality teams to make this tournament. And the metrics certainly help in that regard. The net we feel is working terrifically and is a significant improvement from the RPI, but there's other metrics out there too on the team sheet and others that, you know, that I certainly reference and you know, make sure it's brought to the committee's attention if there's something that's not on the team sheet that's worth sharing. So the committee is focused on what I just said, and that is, you know, especially since it looks like the vast majority of teams are going to play something close to a normal schedule. Right. Certainly a reduction in non-conference games, and certainly, you know, the conference schedule, you know, might be a little strange this year in terms of who you played once, who you played twice. Maybe you don't play teams in your own league at all because of, you know, pauses and cancellations. But I think there's enough data out there for the committee to make informed decisions.
And if a team decides, and I'm not sure if we brought this up yet, but if a team decides, I don't know if it'll happen, that they don't want to play in their conference tournament or they opt out or for whatever reason, is that something that you guys just sort of carry through and say, okay, they're not in the tournament in their own conference tournament, but that AQ bid would still carry whoever wins that tournament? Or how would you guys juggle that? Is that sort of just go as is, or is there a difference there?
Yeah, the committee, you know, put out a statement last week on the men's and women's side, you know, just strongly encouraging any tournament eligible team that qualifies for their conference tournament to participate in their league tournament as they normally would. I mean, it's not under the NCAA's purview to require that to happen. I know,
yeah.
You know, if you go to Twitter, you'll see a lot of people, you know, why isn't the NCAA forcing, you know, conferences hands in this? And that's not up for the NCAA to decide. So the committee, you know, decided to put that statement out. Personally, I think most teams, yeah, if not all, are going to participate. I don't think this will be, you know, a major issue. I certainly hope it's not, as does the committee. But if it does happen, then, you know, the committee's just going to have to go with the data that's there. And so if there's a team that's, you know, a strong at-large team and they decide to back out and not participate in the conference tournament, they can't be penalized for it and they won't be penalized for it. But it does open the door, obviously, for other teams to get that AQ because their path gets a little bit easier with that team's.
What do you think the conversation is going to look like around road games? Think it's going to be typical, or will it maybe be accounted for that they're not true road games?
Yeah, I think, you know, they being the committee, recognizes that, you know, the data is right there in front of them, and that's
right.
You know, teams are generally win at about 68% clip on the road. If you look at, you know, 10 or so years of data, and this year it's dropping every week. And now it's, you know, it's in the mid 60s, which makes sense because conference games are, you know, that percentage is lower, but this year's conference games winning percentage is around 57%. So it's dipping lower too. And so I think that will be factored, but look, the team still has to travel. They still have to, you know, do all those normal things, be on the road. You know, maybe teams are taking more buses than they normally would. And so it's still difficult to win on the road. And if you do it against a high quality team, you'll be rewarded for that. But I still think, I know road performance is still one of the factors that the committee reviews. Will it be judged differently than in a normal year remains to be seen, but I suspect, you know, that'll all be considered, that being the road performance for the entirety of the season will be considered come selection week.
In terms of the committee itself, you know, you guys have had your way of doing things, right? Stick everyone in a room.
Yeah.
Tell them to come out with a bracket 5 days later or whatever it is. I imagine things are a little different now. How is that kind of going to go down this year?
Yeah, last week we had our selection orientation meeting, which at that meeting we always set up the room just as it will look like, even though we're in a different room. Well, this year we used the grand ballroom at the NCAA headquarters for this meeting. And we had socially distanced, and the room was just big. We were all spread out. We had to have microphones, so someone on one end of the room could hear.
Wow.
We all wore our mask. It was the longest I've worn a mask in a single day, to be quite honest, because I'm mostly home. Mm-hmm. Now I'll go to my kids' sporting events and wear the mask for 45 minutes while my sons play a basketball game. But just wearing it for hours, I mean, I found – to be not challenging is a strong word, but it felt different. But we're going to do that at the JW Marriott, you know, next month is that we'll be in a larger room than normal, you know, spread out. You know, we'll have the I'm forgetting what they're called, the devices to tell us if we're spinning, you know, if you're too close to someone.
Oh, right. Yep.
So all that's being, and the committee and the four of us in the room with the committee will be tested, you know, to make sure we're all healthy and staying safe. So, you know, we are taking those precautions into the mix, and it's different. It's certainly not as intimate, but it's obviously necessary.
How are you going to feel when that first ball tips off? I gotta know.
For first four.
Whatever, first game, first game. The first one goes up.
I mean, it was November 25th was a great feeling. Mm-hmm. The first conference tournament that starts, you know, here in a couple of weeks will feel great. When the first four tips off, you know, in Bloomington and West Lafayette, I think it'll be exhilarating. This tournament, I mean, it's easy to say this because, you know, it's my job, you know, to help run this tournament. But this tournament has meant everything to me since I'm a small kid. I mean, like literally some of my first memories living in upstate New York and being not quite 5 years old was, why is everyone so excited on the news? And it was because I was in Central New York and Syracuse had made the 1975 Final Four. Mm-hmm. I can remember that. And then Bird and Magic. And like I said, growing up in Germany and just watching that tournament, and watching the national championship in the middle of the night because of the time difference there. And it was just like no big deal to me. It was like, absolutely, I'm making. I told you the story about being in college. And I didn't go on spring break in college because spring break fell during the tournament. I'm not.
Yeah, same here, my man.
I'll tell another story. My wife and I were planning a summer wedding like any good SID would do because
there you go.
There you go.
But then my dad was still active duty and he said, you know, I got news for you. I'm being sent to Korea and leaving in the spring. So we moved our wedding up to April and my wife said, you know, what do you think? And this was 1994 we got married, and I'm living in Arkansas at the time. So,
Oh wow.
So my wife says, well, what do you think about April 7th? And I said, I'm not getting married on April 2nd. She's like, I'm like, that's the day of the Final Four, you know? And she's like, seriously? And I'm like, yes, seriously. I said, for one thing, no one in my wedding party will come.
Right.
If Arkansas is in the Final Four, especially.
Yeah, the real 40 minutes of hell would have been that ceremony. Yeah,
exactly. He was like, so we're going to set our wedding date around some basketball tournament. Our life is going to revolve around a basketball tournament. Little did you know that our life literally would revolve around a basketball tournament all the years later. So my wedding anniversary is nice. So.
There you go.
At least you set the level of expectation right from the jump, no pun intended.
Exactly right. So, so the point to all that rambling and probably uninteresting was this tournament just means everything to me as a fan, first and foremost. You know, the job is a dream come true. You know, and I know my colleagues and I, and certainly the men's basketball committee, are going to do everything we can to make sure it goes off in the best manner possible and everyone stays healthy, and fingers crossed that, you know, that we can achieve that.
All right. Very good. Do you have anything else here, Nick?
All set. All good.
All right. Well, before we let you go, you've mentioned a few times that you kind of think that there's a lot to be put out there, right? In terms of what we're everything from fans to opt-out policies to blah, blah, blah. Do you have any kind of working timeline on what this is actually going to look like here in the next couple of weeks in terms of when, who knows what and when? I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah, I know. Not specifically at this time. I'm waiting. I'll probably, you know, as soon as this concludes, check my email to see if there's an update, especially in the fan attendance, because, you know, I think it could be soon. But like I said, there could be some other factors that are holding that up, and I suspect that's the case. So, you know, like I said earlier, we have to, you know, make sure, you know, that we're aligned with several different people internally and externally before we can, you know, make that announcement, because it's obviously something you want to get right. And, you know, so it's February 17th. So it's easy to say soon because, yeah, the tournament's going to be here soon. So a lot will be happening, and, you know, we'll announce everything as soon as we can.
Outstanding. Well, my friend, I hope to see you in Indy in some way, shape, or form. If it's a wave across the street, whatever it may be, I imagine you are very much in a tier one personnel, and I'll be a hanger on
the last tier
at best. What's the lowest tier?
Yeah, the lowest tier. Tier Z.
Tier 17.
Perfect. That's the USBWA is just as that. Just exactly. Yeah. Well, this was great, David. I appreciate your time. No, it's probably tough to carve out an hour in the middle of the day right at this time of year. So it is very much appreciated, and hopefully the listeners got something out of this. So
I hope that you really enjoyed it. Brandon, Nick, you guys take care.
You take care of yourself. Thanks, and everyone out there. Be sure to tip those bartenders and servers. Place where I